You're about to enter the world of On the Cusp. The intense language used here requires that you put your brain in pause, place your watch next to the microwave, and experience a different level of mind diffusion. Now sit down, grab your coffee, buckle up, and enjoy what is about to happen and coming your way. What you are listening to is On the Cusp.
This program will be broadcasted in Spanish in the left speaker, English in the right speaker, or English in both speakers for our bilingual listeners.
Hello, everyone. And hello to you, Johnny.
Hi there. We're
going to go ahead and get started with tonight's conversation. Just for you, Johnny, I did some research today about the podcast. We, On the Cusp, is a five-star rated podcast. Believe it
Hello.
Or not.
Hello.
That's awesome.
Hello.
It's only one rating from one listener.
Hey, a five's a five. I don't care.
Listen, when people give ratings, they don't show how many rated it. It's just, you know, it's a five, it's whatever.
When you
we'll take it.
They don't say how many times you won an Oscar. They said Oscar winning.
It's an Oscar winner.
But if you're listening, you're listening to a five-star rated podcast.
Yes.
And not Excellent. Many podcasts could say that, right?
No.
So, okay, let's get started. So I'm going to do the reading for Johnny. That's who we're spending the night with. That doesn't sound good.
No. Let's rephrase
I'm
that.
Take that out.
I'm securing my manhood.
Cut that out, Robert.
It's all good.
It's a foursome tonight. Okay, let's get serious now. John Orfanides, mainly known as Johnny O, is just a lab guy and was very fortunate to be at the right place at the right time. Johnny was involved with 3M Lava in the early stages and had one of the first in vivo articles published in the US for Lava, which I did not know that. Johnny was involved with bringing the first haptic run digital system for dental with the first partial software from Sensible Technologies. He was running a small lab in Boston and began doing research on zirconia and had papers published for the 3-year and 5-year study for zirconia. At that point, he was research associate at Tufts University School for Dental Medicine and later became the digital trainer of all systems at the school for the postgraduate prosthodontics department under Dr. Let me take a drink for that one.
Yeah. Let's see if you can get that one right.
Dr. Hiroshi Hirayama.
Yes.
Perfect.
Great man.
Yeah. And by the way, this is 10% of his reading. So another 40 minutes. During that time, Exocad decided to enter the US market and was started in his lab with Larry Bodoni, who is still the president of Exocad North America. Kudos to Larry, by the way. Great.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good dude. Good
he dude. Now has a lab, Johnny, not Larry. He now has a lab with two partners, Ralph Riga and Richard Chun in Tampa, in the lab named Amerident. Amerident is a laboratory that designs and manufactures their restorations in the U.S., American Dental Laboratory. And if anyone is interested to talk to Johnny privately, his office number is 813-803-5662. And we'll put all this information in the podcast later on. So
and Johnny okay. likes long walks on the beach and cigars.
Yes.
Under the moonlight.
That's right.
What's your blood type, Johnny? We didn't learn everything else about you, man.
What's yeah, you, well, I mean, you know, there's the list is long, but yeah, my blood type is O positive, you know, Greeks
oh, same here.
Generally oh, O really? Positive. Yeah, of course.
Oh.
You know?
Nice. It's good to
Why
know,
is that?
John.
Well, and, we're universal, man. We're universal.
Oh, I'm B plus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. Sorry. We'll be there for you if you ever need blood, Ramon. We'll be there for you.
Thank you. When I was getting ready for this, I was thinking, when did I meet Johnny and what happened after I met Johnny? And so I just want to tell you a story. And I don't know if you know this, John, but this has to do with Marco Ratz.
Oh, yeah.
Mo knows Marco Ratz.
Yep.
And so he also has a very special story. He met Marco. I don't know if you want to tell it or not, but that's up to you.
It's all about Johnny O. This is not about me. This is about Johnny O.
For another one.
It'll be the next podcast. Yeah, it'll be the next podcast.
I kind of want to know the story now.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah. So I think I went to Johnny's laboratory, and you had, it wasn't the lava, it was the it was a different milling system.
I had the cable machine, but that's not when we met. I'll tell you the story when we met the first time.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't
see,
that when you were pouring wax into the crown and you were telling
no,
me?
No, see, actually, the truth of the matter is that Ramon actually hates me. That's why he didn't remember our first meeting.
Wow.
You know? Oh, so he's erased that.
So watch his eyes when I tell you when we met. So we actually met in Terrytown, like in 2002, when him and Scott were at a booth.
2008.
They started.
Okay, it was 2008.
Yeah.
I was busting his balls because that's what I do. You guys know me as that. Because of they were selling the Amann Girrbach steamer that had a stainless steel nozzle with an aluminum machine. And I'm like, why would you guys be doing that? Like, that's crazy. So it was really funny. And then from that point, then Ramon came to the office. But the first time we met, it was really, really actually quite funny because I was just there just busting their chops. I wasn't going to buy anything. And that's kind of what happened.
And up to today, you still haven't bought anything.
I haven't bought anything yet, but I sold a few things. You
that's
know?
True.
On a side note, that steamer, when it didn't shock you or bust a valve, that was an excellent steamer.
Yes, it was.
The footprint,
the beauty of it, when it did work, it was phenomenal. I had three of them in my lab at McDill.
Yeah, yeah
we had one.
I loved them. I love
but
it.
You get shot.
If you well,
yeah. So the beauty of that is, you know, Mrs. Lincoln also enjoyed the play.
I mean, come on.
He got shot, but she loved the play.
She loved the play. I mean, there was a small little mishap, but she still liked the play.
Listen, I bought that before I even knew what Amann Girrbach was, and when they started shorting out, I called when it was over in Tampa. And somebody picked up the phone and was like, hello?
Yeah. And did they say, do you have it plugged in?
No, it was
like, is it plugged in, sir?
Yeah, it was.
Is it plugged in?
I started talking about the steamer and they just, you know, oh, yeah, we'll get back with you, you know.
You're still waiting for him to call you back?
Waiting,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I had the steamer. I had the smart mix. I had the, what's the, no flame.
The gear form?
All that stuff. When I first met Ramon, when he walked into the lab, you would have thought, you know, I was already partnered with AG because I had a lot of stuff already. Didn't know what they were. They just, it looked cool, you know, so.
Wow, it's always a great product, that's for sure.
He's talking about me, Mo. I mean, Johnny.
Oh, that you were a great product?
No, that I look cool.
Ramon looked good. You look good.
I said, this little dude was in the infantry? Like, what'd they have him do? Like...
They had to carry him. Let's get back to Johnny. This is not about me.
Sorry.
So Johnny. So you?
Yes.
You're from Greece.
Yes, I'm a descendant of Greek parents.
Okay.
So I was born in Toronto, Canada. My dad was a tech. My grandfather was a tech.
Oh, wow.
My aunts and uncles were techs. My mother was a tech. My brother was a dental. Denturist. My other brother was a dentist. My wife's a hygienist. So pretty much everybody in the family was in dental. I decided to do the rebellious angle and become a technician. So
and they tried to talk you out of it.
They tried to talk me out of it.
I'm gonna do.
Absolutely. So so it was really interesting. I had a great upbringing because you know, my dad was an immigrant. And he had the, let's call it the American dream, but it was the Canadian one. So he bought a house and did all that. And we were very fortunate. And the lab for the longest time was running just with the family. So I think the first time I did a casting, I was like 8 years old. I remember when we got our, when we got our induction.
With a broken arm machine?
Yeah, with a broken arm. My mother was scared, very scared.
She should have been.
Yeah, so all that stuff. So I was very fortunate to learn all that stuff at an early age.
Wow.
Yeah.
John, so were you born in Canada? You're Canadian?
Yeah, I'm a Canadian. Yeah, I didn't get my papers yet. I've been a resident alien for
So you're illegal?
30 years. No, I'm actually legal. I'm a legal.
You about to get Ramon fired up?
I'm legal. I absolutely.
He's about to call his boys on you.
yeah, for sure. No, that's why I actually got my papers yesterday because I knew I was going to get on this podcast.
You were about to get exposed.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it was funny because when I came here, it was in 1992. September of 1992 is when I immigrated into the United States. So I am an immigrant to the United States and I love this country and it's great.
What made you move here?
My wife.
Your wife?
Yeah.
She made you move. It's like, I can't take it no more in Canada. I can't take this guy Trudeau moving to Canada.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was a kid, the father was
13 at the time.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was a kid, Trudeau, the father was the prime minister. But actually, I never talked about this and maybe you guys don't know this and I don't want to make it a downer. But one of the reasons that I moved to the U.S. is there was a little bit of a family accident and I never really talk about it because I didn't want it to define me. Mm-hmm. So when I was 19 years old, 1989, there was an airplane accident. And basically, the whole family was on the airplane and everyone died. And my brother is still up in Canada, the one who is the denturist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he does... He's quite well known up in Canada for dentures and being a denturist, and he has a family. So I'm here in the States. Mm-hmm. And that was part of me moving. And I think that's why maybe I have a little, this is now becoming a psychology session. Maybe I have a chip on my shoulder kind of, you know, but I'm always driving and striving to not only make dentistry a better place, but you know, my family spent a lot of time in it. And I feel for dental technologists because there's a lot of families out there. It's a very family oriented community. And we really try our best to do a good job. And we get beat up sometimes more than we should. But at the end of the day, you know, my angle is a little bit of anger to some of the corporate people that try to sell a printer or something, you know, a mill, and they're not really being upfront and don't understand that this wife and husband are saving up their money. They have to spend 20 or 30 grand and they buy it. And all of a sudden it's not doing what was promised. They can't give it back. And their whole stress level changes, right? I'm very fortunate. I have a lot of people in the industry and I'm able to, you know, make a few moves and some noise and people are willing to listen. But that kind of, if there's anything that bothers me is the sort of the not true statement because we want to sell something. Mm-hmm. And that's been something that bothers me. And it's just that in this industry, you can kind of almost get away with murder and they're not the only ones. There's a lot of companies that went through it. My dad went through it. And all that stuff because they didn't understand how cements expanded back in the day, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't that it was a bad product. It's just that they didn't follow through with all of their testing the way they should have.
Yeah.
But that's another story for another time.
Yeah.
But again, my heart is to the lab techs that are out there. They put a lot of time in the business.
And you know what? And the investment that these laboratories make, and I'm speaking more or less about actually everyone, right? Any laboratory, because the investments with CAD/CAM or digital equipment, that investment has gone, it's so high And yep. it used to not be like that before CAD/CAM. And yeah. so entry level mills, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, $30,000. And if that mill is not working for a week, it's going to hurt that laboratory, especially yeah. the small ones, like you say.
Yeah, I'll tell you a crazy story. My first mill, I was a one-man lab in downtown Boston. I was teaching at Tufts University, and I was doing research at the same time. So I was a research associate at Tufts. And I happened to purchase a cable machine for $187,000.
Wow.
I was paying.
That was a bargain back then.
I was paying $1,100 a kilo for zirconia back then.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
$1,100. Yeah. And
that's how those prices were.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. It was crazy.
$1,100 a kilo.
$1,100 a kilo.
Sounds like you were buying something else and it wasn't zirconia.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, sure, well, that was zirconia, you know, that you were buying.
I wish
was
I was.
That was not zirconia powder.
I would have been making much more if it was the other powder. I'll tell you that much. But yeah, so it's changed quite a bit.
So going back to cable. So the story that I was going to tell you, that now I got to finish it. I went to the laboratory where Johnny was, and he showed me how he did that cable machine, $118,000 or $189,000, whatever it was. You were milling one side and then turning it over.
Filling it with wax,
the milled side. I never understood this. Like, that makes no sense.
It made a lot of sense, actually. Was that
the official process?
That was the official process. There were no sprues, and it was the only system that I know of that mm-hmm. I could mill zirconia. Remember, at that point, we were only doing copings.
Yeah.
Right? So I could mill zirconia down to 0.1 millimeter with no fractures because it was supported with zirconia, with wax.
With wax. The wax.
Correct. So which is funny because their patent was the infiltration of wax, mm-hmm. which is the exact same thing that you guys or AG has in their tooth, where it's in the wax and you're milling both sides. So it's very interesting mm-hmm. Of that. But that's how you would mill zirconia. You'd have to heat up slowly and then mill it. It had a double spindle. So one always had a 2 millimeter, one mm-hmm. side. And the other side always had a 1 millimeter mm-hmm. and it would just spin. So the head would spin. It would run all the insides with the 2, and then it would spin and run all the, other details in with the 1.
Okay. The real story about this was that, you know, we started getting close to Johnny, and then Marco wanted to go see Johnny.
Oh, yeah. Remember
the taxi? I think the taxi or the
limo. It was a limo, and it was a limo. Marco came and with Gerard Mouflet.
Yeah. And so behind Johnny's office was a fish market or some type of warehouse.
My office was in a fish market, and you're going to laugh. This is funny. I was on the second floor. That whole area was mob filled, right? And no one ever came with a limo. And so Marco and Gerard Mouflet come out with these really nice German suits, you know, the attaché cases. And I'm telling you, there must have been 8,000 photos of them from, you know, the stakeout guys, the FBI guys taking pictures going, what are these guys doing here?
Who are these guys?
Yeah, it was really funny. But, you know, that's where it was. I was right in the district there, right on the Dorchester line and in South Boston. And I was, you know, 18 blocks away from BU, which and Tufts University. So it was right around the corner. So it was real easy for me.
So Marco came back to the office. He goes, Ron, who the fuck is a lab in a fish market? What do they do? Do they get their crowns and then they go buy fish? Or what's going on here?
I got to tell you.
Location, location, location.
Yeah, I was right in the city of Boston, so it was great. And my neighbors were good. The guys downstairs, you know, once in a while, they'd have a good catch come up to me. So a side note, not dental. The guys downstairs were the main importers for pretty much all of the swordfish for New England. So it would come every morning. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, that place was like downtown Boston at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was like packed trucks and, you know, the airplane, the air carriers were in there filled with ice with all the swordfish. And, you know, once in a while they'd be like, hey, Johnny, here's some swordfish, take some home to the family. So it was very nice of them to do that.
So you had, I was going to ask you that. So obviously you had it. Okay.
Yeah.
When did you start? Because you also mentioned that ExoCat. When did you start working with ExoCat and how did that happen?
Oh, this is a great story. So if people remember, yeah, it actually does. So it's kind of funny. So it's I'll try to make it as short as possible. But basically what happened was Sensible decided to close down because they weren't, you know, the partial system. They had a lot of problems with 3D systems back in the day. There was some issues with the machines, but Larry actually was hired at Sensible after me, and Larry and I became good friends. I was actually the first guy in the country to cast 3 partials in one ring because we were printing the partials, and we were casting the partials with material that wasn't castable. So I did all the testing with Larry on how to make sure that the ring doesn't expand and explode. Right.
So you were circumventing the FDA too.
Yeah, I was absolutely doing that, and I was good at it. So basically, what ended up happening?
Was that in America?
Were you doing that in America? Yeah, that was in good old Boston. So what was funny was Larry and I became really close, and Larry developed a system within 3D systems. He had 88 printers worldwide on a server. And when there was, you know, I don't know if you guys know about Larry's background, but Larry's a super sharp guy. He went to MIT. He's an electrical engineer. And so he figured out that before a particular part in the printers failed, it would spike in a milliamp or a micro voltage. I don't remember exactly what it was. And so as soon as that happened, they would order the part and ship it to the customer. And 2 days later, the part would absolutely fail. And they were like, how did you guys know? So Larry had a ton of experience in printing. Uh-huh. And so when everybody got fired, I didn't feel bad to a certain extent because I had a lab. I was always running a lab. But I kind of felt bad for the people there that was their main job. Mm-hmm. And now they had to go look for a job, right? I was being a consultant, so I had my job. It wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
So Larry came to the lab and he goes, Johnny, you know, I don't know what to do. I'm like, Larry, listen. And I hope, you know, he remembers the same thing. But I told him, I'm like, Larry, listen, you know so much about printing. Like, of course, you got your degree from MIT. You can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But you know so much about printing. And we're still in the baby stages in dental. You can do something amazing. And right at that time, there was the IDS was happening. And so I said, why don't you go to that? And he said, you know, maybe I'll do that. I'm like, dude, you got to go. If you're going to find anything, you're going to find it there. So anyway, when he gets back, he's telling me the story where he's walking around and he sees this company called ExoCat. Doesn't know anything about it. And there's a little sticker on the wall that says looking for North American president. Mm-hmm. So he's like, let me go in, talk about it. And so when he met with Till, they had so many things in common and they kind of hit it off right away. Tillman was like, all right, let's make this happen. Let's get a little proposal going. Tell me how you're going to run it in the US. So Larry comes back and he's like, you're not going to believe this. We got to meet these guys in California. Tillman is coming and we got to show a good face. I'm like, okay, so what do we got to do? And at that point, you know how I kind of know a lot of people. It was really funny because Tillman comes. Mo, you're going to laugh at this. So Tillman comes over and we're sitting in a booth and we're talking and he's asking me what I do and what I know. And I'm telling him I'm working at Tufts and blah, blah, blah. And this is in 2010, May of 2010. And then he goes, hey, maybe we can meet some people. And Larry goes, yeah, you know, Johnny, can you bring some people over? I'm like, sure. Who do you want to meet? And, you know, some names came up like Peter Peasy, you know, and they're like, hey, can we meet Peter Peasy? I'm like, yeah, sure. I know Pete. 2 minutes later, Pete comes, taps me on the shoulder. Hey, Johnny, how's it going? What's happening? Right. And, you know, Sammy Tanaka, rest his soul. He came by too. They wanted to meet him. And by the way, I do want to say something about Sammy Tanaka. He was a great man. He did a lot of stuff for dental technology. Mm-hmm. And it was sad that he passed away, but he really did a lot for mm-hmm. dentistry and yes. buildup yeah. that a lot of people yep. don't know. So I just want to do a kudos to him because he was a great mentor for many people, including my father. So that's kind of how ExoCAD happened. And then it started in my lab. So, you know, they needed a location at the height of when we really started kicking this off. I had 19 different scanners in the office, plus two handheld scanners, believe it or not. So it was pretty interesting. I was validating them. Yep. Yeah.
Was the MAP 400 one of them?
Actually, it came afterwards. It was the old version. Remember with the Motion One? It was the Motion One. It was the Activity 101 scanner.
You already had it?
No.
Before?
What? No. It came right at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's how it kind of all started. And then 4 years later, you know, Larry and I were running around doing all the shows. You know, you guys know all that because, you know, what a runaround it is and you got to be ready for the show. And, you know, and you got to remember when I was a kid, 9, 10 years old, I was going to Chicago with my dad and my brothers. So, you know, I'm a kid going to the show and meeting all these people. And then 2010 comes around. Now I'm behind the booth talking to people, seeing the old timers that knew my dad. And that's why this community is a little bit special.
Yeah, definitely.
Small, definitely. Sure.
Johnny, why did you not go to Tarpon Springs?
You know, I don't know.
You went to Boston and not to Tarpon
Springs. I went to Boston.
That makes no sense at all.
Well, he found out about Tarpon Springs once he moved to the area.
I did.
Tarpon Springs?
Yeah. Well, you know, Toronto has a very large Greek community. And so when I moved to Boston, there's a lot of Greeks there too. And, you know, people tend to hang out with their groups. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah, there's a lot of Greeks over here. Have you been to Tarpon
Springs? Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. But why would I want to eat Greek food when I have the best restaurant at my house?
You that's know? True. That's true. Yeah.
So,
plus, you can't live in Tarpon Springs unless you've been arrested. So, you know what I'm saying? It's a requirement.
That's another like living in that's Pasture. Another story for another time.
County.
Yeah. So.
So, Johnny, so you did not work in Canada as a lab technician.
No,
except for your family when you were with your family.
Yeah. So no, I did not work as a technician in Canada. You know, with what happened, it was a big whirlwind, of course, obviously. Yeah. And, you know, we were trying to run the lab. My brother and I, my brother Harry, he lost his wife and his 18-month-old child. It was terrible. It was just a mm-hmm. terrible situation. So, you know, for us it was trying to have some kind of strength, mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to get religious, but, you know, God was definitely a very strong part in my life and still is now. Mm-hmm. And that's what drives me to have integrity. He kept us through a very difficult, odd time. Like you just don't understand how to deal with that kind of stuff. And we did the best we could. And it was time for me to move on and mm-hmm. kind of just start something different. Plus, the truth of the matter is, you know, I got married when I was 21. So it was 1991. 89 is when it happened. 91, I got married. And I started thinking about family. And I said, you know, if we decide to have kids, which we were planning on having kids, mm-hmm. I'm like, why shouldn't the kids be near their grandparents? Like, it doesn't matter to me if I'm in Toronto or not. I'll start up a business. I'll do something. And so it was important for my wife to experience as much as she could with her parents. I didn't have that luxury. So I'm like, why would I take that away and make it limited when I can have my kids have grandparents and get a connection with them? My wife could be near them. And honestly, after having four kids, Mo, you would know this because you have five, but you know how tough it is trying to raise a family, and having family around you to help you is so beneficial and awesome.
Yeah. No, it is. It definitely is. Absolutely.
I have four, so just want to throw it out there.
Well, I have two, but you know, remember, of all of us here, I'm actually the one that brought them into this world.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah, my job was just a little bit harder than y'all's.
Yeah, a little different.
Y'all just had fun.
So. Yeah. both were girls.
Yeah, both girls. Did you all know that Tarpon Springs is the sponge capital of the world? Have you guys ever been? Do you guys even go to Tarpon Springs at all?
I've been there.
Yeah, but did you know that it's the sponge capital of the world?
I don't know if it's the sponge capital of the world because they came from Greece.
Actually do harvest a lot of. Yeah,
I know they do.
And you don't believe? You know, you go there and you're like, really? I mean, out of here? But yes, they actually do harvest.
Well, I mean, you know,
I mean, so, yeah.
Well, since there's a lot of arrests there, like Mo said. Sponge, soap.
You know, I remember when I first moved to the area, I worked over there in Palm Harbor, and the guys had the little sponges. They were the sea sponges that they would use to clean the brushes. And you know how that was like you know how it is with the ceramics, you know, they have the nice little palettes and everything.
Yeah.
And for a while it was those sea sponges. And that's how I ended up going to Tarpon Springs. And that's right. That's where I used to get all my sponges, and I used to get the sea urchin spines to then attach those to my little endophile. You know, do the cool stuff.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you did all the cool stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't. Well, not only the sponges. I didn't realize that. If somebody said this already, it's the highest percentage of Greek Americans out of any city in the United States.
I believe it.
That's why I was wondering.
Percentage in together, but. The largest city actually outside of Greece. So number one would be Athens, right? Athens, Greece has the largest population of Greece. And you would think the second largest city, which is Salonika or Thessaloniki, would be the second largest, but it's actually Melbourne, Australia. They have like almost, three quarters of a million Greeks are just in Melbourne.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, Toronto has a ton. I mean, my dad, when he immigrated, he had the opportunity to go to Australia or Toronto, and he decided that he wanted to freeze. So he's like, hey, I want to go to Toronto. Why go to Australia and enjoy, you know, life? Yeah. So that's kind of what happened.
9% of the people in Tarpon Springs speak Greek in their home.
I believe
that's
it.
Actually,
that's pretty low.
Not what? 9%?
That's 90.
100% of Mexicans speak Spanish. They all speak Spanish. If you're Greek, how could you not? Johnny, do you speak Greek?
So in my house, no. With my parents, I didn't speak English.
There you go. So you're part of the 9%.
Let me clear this up for Ramon. Okay. 10% of the city is Greek.
Yes.
10%. 9% of those 90. Actually speak Greek.
Okay.
90.
9% of the Greeks.
No.
90%
Greek. Of the total population of that city, which is kind of cool. One in 10 people in that city can speak Greek.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
That's different than what you said initially.
Yeah.
No, I said
or I understood.
No, I said 9% of the total population. I didn't say the total population of Greeks. I said 9% of the total population speak Greek at home.
Uh-huh. Aren't they all Greek, though?
Never mind.
You know, the good part is, like, we can end the conversation because we invented everything anyway.
Yeah.
You know,
like what?
Like everything. You know, the Greeks invented everything. Come on.
That's good.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Most
drinking. okay. Let's go back to Johnny.
All right.
Ameridant.
Yes.
You have two partners.
Yes.
Richard. One was
Richard and Ralph.
And Ralph, yeah. How did you meet them? Or how did you guys say, hey, let's get together and let's put this lab together.
Yeah, it was really interesting. We had
and then the second part is why Tampa? That's interesting.
Yeah, so I moved from, so it was funny because in my career, after teaching at Tufts and running the lab, so I was actually teaching at Tufts, running the lab, and working with ExoCAD and, you know, teaching people ExoCAD. And I did that all together. And I started getting burned out. And I was like, maybe it's time to go to corporate, you know, do a corporate gig. And so I asked to be at a different level with ExoCAD, and they declined respectfully. And so I decided to go corporate. And what ended up happening was I went corporate for 9 weeks with Bagel, and it didn't work out well. But in those nine weeks, I did some pretty interesting testing with selective laser melting, because they had two big in EOS machines.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided to leave, and I went to work with Andy Jackson up in Buffalo. And that's how we started. We pretty much started Evolve and digital workflows and high level printing. And Andy's like super sharp guy. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we did. You know, Joshua, a lot of people know Joshua, obviously. Yep. So he got trained really cool. Like we used to do stuff together, and then he just, you know, spread his wings and fly it. And it was great.
Yeah. We spent the night with you guys in Germany, Mo. With yes. Johnny and Johnny. Yeah.
We ate like cavemen at the dental.
We didn't.
The big party.
We didn't spend the night with you guys. We were at Strictly Dental.
Yes.
Let's clear that up, Ramon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again.
Especially after the intro.
Yeah. Actually,
night thing is like.
Yeah. <he's,
laughs> it was a lot of fun seeing Mo's eyes when we saw a whole cow on a spit. And he was like, are you serious? I'm like, dude. And, you know, the drinks were flowing and, yeah, it was a great, that's actually one of the highlights of IDS that, you know, when it's all over, people just want to hang out, you know, competitors and people. It was a great time. It was a great
time. You know, the drinks were free, but Mo paid like $100 to get, what was it, like a 24 pack of beer or like 40 something pack of beer. And then he brought it over through the dance floor.
All right.
And you lost like half of it.
Let me tell you what happened. This is what happened. This is kind of funny.
Yeah.
So it's the same night. You remember those little, they look like little mini soda cans of beer. They're the little bitty glasses. Right?
They're Kölsch.
Kölsch.
Yes. So
there
was probably, AG was probably 20 deep there. And every time they went around, they had like 6 or 7 glasses. So it was like, it didn't work. So all I did was go up. You remember in high school, the cafeterias, they had the little trays where all the glasses would go and you can hold like 30 of them in there. So I went and handed the lady a $20 bill and said, listen, I got a bunch of people over here. Can you fill this for me? And so she filled that whole thing. I'm walking back to the group. There's people I don't even know trying to reach and grab. I'm holding it up high because they're reaching in like I work there. And when I got back to the group, you would have thought like I won the World Cup and I was holding the golden, you know, the trophy.
The trophy.
Everybody's face was just like, yeah, you know, couldn't believe it because it was like 5 at a time. And so it was good.
It wasn't messy. It was mosey.
I think me and Johnny gained like 10 pounds just at that table.
Oh, at least. And that was only in beer. Forget about the food.
Good times, though.
Those were good times.
Yeah. Actually, I got a chance to tap the beer, the Kölsch beer barrel at the AG party. That was fun.
Was it AG?
Yeah, it was at AG.
Nice.
I went from AG to ExoCAD. And they also had, you know,
tapping. Oh, yeah. Sure. Everybody's tapping over there. Everybody's tapping over there.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, let's go back to Tampa, to your partners.
So basically, after I moved away from Andy, which was a beautiful kind of situation where we split, you know, we're still very good friends.
Yeah. Except in the winter.
except in the winter. Yeah, Buffalo's crazy. But basically, I moved to Jacksonville. I was there for a year and a half. And during that time, I was working on a project and I met Ralph. But I've known Ralph from New York from before. I didn't know Richie. But I heard a lot of good things about Richie. And he ended up working at the same laboratory that I was at that time.
Yeah.
And when we were talking, Richie was going to be part of the team, but I never let Richie know that I was going to be a part of it. And he kept asking the other guys, hey, is Johnny, can we get Johnny to work with us? And then when we had a meeting, like all in Tampa, and I showed up, he was like, oh my gosh. So, so we have a really special partnership. Like we all have our specialty. We all kind of think the same for the business. Mm-hmm. We all care about each other's families and the families that are here. And the reason that we came to Tampa was Ralph already had a small little lab running.
Yeah.
And we said, all right, let's do the jump and we'll get together. And we signed all the papers and everything happened beautifully. And we're about a year and a half in and we're doing good. For a business that's so young, we're doing exceptionally well. And we're very fortunate. You guys have
been growing.
Yes.
At least in the people that I see, it's there's more and more every time I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of times. And I'll be there next week, by the way.
Great.
I'll swing by.
Excellent.
You talk, or we've talked in the past about Olan 4 cases.
Yes.
And is that now kind of like your main?
It is. We do a lot of... Yeah, we do a lot of Olan 4. I mean, I think in the short time that we were here, people kind of know who I am even here, which is kind of interesting. I never had a footprint in Florida because, you know, when you're from the Northeast, Florida and California are just like different animals altogether. So I was doing really strong in the Northeast and the rest of the country because we, you know, Andy and I traveled a lot, saw a lot of new products and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So we were strong there. And when I moved to Florida, I met a few people, but it really kicked off when we opened up the lab because they kind of saw what we can do, especially with digital technology. And, you know, you have to look at us with a different set of lenses. Today, there's a lot of designers, and I'm saying that a little bit facetiously because you can design a tooth, but you know, the question is, do you really need to know why the tooth looks like that and why it's in that position? Maybe, maybe not. But when it comes to full arch reconstructions and understanding sort of high level prosthodontics, there's very few people that really understand it. I was very fortunate because, you know, my dad was doing big bridge work and I learned that stuff from the old timers. And I understand it in a different way. The new guys just place teeth, make it look good visually, and that's it, out the door. Then the function problems happen. So I'm using that a little differently, and our language is a little different when we're doing full arch cases. We do quite a bit of them. So it's been very good and healthy for us.
Yeah, but there's these fundamentals that you got to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if the designers that you're talking about today have those fundamentals.
They don't, because Tampa is the number one outsource hub in the country. So everything gets shipped out to, it doesn't matter. I don't care where it goes. Mm-hmm. It leaves North America, right? And what happens is when it leaves North America, doctors actually don't really care. Some guys flat out told us, I don't care where it goes, just get it back to me, right? We're on a different path. And because I do care about this business, I see that there's not a lot of schools. I see that there's not a lot of training. But what I do see, which is a little bit frustrating, is all of these companies, there's a lot of companies starting up, and they're like, hey, let's say, for example, we do billing software, but we can be your interface to crowns if you need an overflow person, right?
Right.
Or you got these big companies that do designs. Listen, it's a free country. Do what you want. But don't hide behind it. Have a sack, right? And I don't know if you're going to edit that, but have a sack. Have a sack and be like, yes, we are proud of getting our products done in this country. Because I'll tell you, if me as a Greek was getting stuff done in Greece, you would know about it. I would say all of my designs come from European designers in Greece, right? I would be proud of that because my heritage is Greek.
Yeah.
But I'm in America and I'm proud of the Americans that produce work here. If you want to sell something from China or Taiwan or the Middle East, it's a free country. Germany, I couldn't care less where it goes. But
they should just be open about it.
Don't try to hide it. And the funny thing is that for some reason, dentists don't want to tell their patients. And we've had this huge dilemma, and I'm not here to fight anybody. What I'm here to say is when you wear an underwear or a t-shirt or glasses, you know exactly where they're made. If you personally have a problem with products from those countries, then you can look like my glasses here, even though they say Armani, they're made in China, right? These particular ones. If I don't like China for some reason, I can choose not to purchase these and spend $300 extra to have Italian glasses. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's not hidden, right? So there is not one you can't buy a grape not knowing where it's from.
Where it's coming from.
You can't buy anything in medical not knowing where it's from for patients, for you to disclose to patients. And all of a sudden, they don't have to disclose it. And
But in Florida, you have to disclose the origin of the material. Yeah. They're supposed to.
That's not true. That's not true. And I'll tell you how the get around is. The get around is if I have five locations, let's say I have a lab in China, I can purchase a lab tomorrow in China and I can purchase a lab tomorrow in Costa Rica and Mexico and Brazil. And all I have to say is your product could potentially be made in one of our five locations. They don't specifically tell you this product has a sticker that says made in Greece with a Greek flag.
Well, as far as the way I understand the law here in Florida, they are supposed to disclose that.
Yeah.
And, it's ultimately the responsibility of the doctor to make sure that he is getting that information in case the patient should ask.
Yeah. So basically, this is how the law works. It's not so important. Like, look, to me, I'm running my business.
Johnny's covering himself one eye.
Yeah. So basically, what's really interesting, and you know, a lot of people are saying, "Oh, you know, that's a really touchy subject." It's not really. I have a business model. It's a free country. I have a particular business model, and other companies have particular business models, and you can run them that way. And that's that. At the end of the day, it's a responsibility of the dentist to make sure that what they're giving their patient is great. And if they feel great about it, great. They're not my patient. My customer is the dentist. My customer, in essence, isn't really the patient. That's the dentist's customer. So I need to fulfill something for manufacturing for that customer.
Go ahead. Sorry.
So the way you want to think about it is when you buy a car from Ford, if there's a problem with it, even if it was made somewhere else, Ford is responsible for that product. You don't go to the company that made the AC condenser and say, I have warranty on this car. You have to fix this and you got to find the people that made the AC condenser, right? It's kind of the same thing for me. So we've decided as partners that we want to manufacture and get everything here done in the United States. And that's what we do. And that's it. You know,
but doesn't part of that responsibility fall to the patient to say to the dentist, hey, where is my product being manufactured?
They have no clue.
Ramon, half the time the patient doesn't even know that there's a lab tech making it.
No, you're right. You're right.
They think the dentist makes it, but they're the consumer and they do not.
But here's the other thing. I'm in South America now, And I see a lot of patients going to South America all of the time.
Sure.
When I'm waiting in an office, I see nothing but Americans waiting to see a dentist. So okay. they know that there's options out there.
Yeah, but let me tell you something about that situation. And I can tell you because I've seen it firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was doing work with Andy, we were in Tijuana, TJ, which is one of my favorite cities. It's gritty. It's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And we had some friends there. And basically, we went to this place called Algodones, which is mm-hmm. also known as Molar City. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't been there, if you're driving in Arizona going towards the border, you will see big signs, probably 40 signs, maybe 100 yards apart from each other, like back to back, 40 signs. Yeah. Come to Dr. Smith, come to Dr. John, come to Dr. Mo, come to Dr., you know, whoever. And we're right over the border and you can get crowns, you can get your eyes checked, you can get a hearing aid. Do you know that 90% of the work, if not all of the work in Algodones gets sent to the US and is made in the United States? And I'll tell you why I believe it's a different market in other countries. The American quality has some kind of standing. People outside of the United States see it as a great product. For example, when I talked to Mexicans in TJ and in Algodones, and I went to visit a whole bunch of dentists in Ensenadas, mm-hmm. They were like, we don't like some of the products that come out of China. And don't get me wrong, I don't have a problem with China.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just talking about what I was told. I've seen work out of China that was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So it has nothing to do with, but when you're talking about low cost, like the really low cost stuff, it's not great. And so mm-hmm. what they're seeing is, hey, I'd rather pay $100 and make sure it's made in the United States. And I can still have a discounted rate for the patient. And they're basically, people are flocking there. And believe me, it's not that much cheaper, but they can get it done in a day. I truly believe that doctors being trained today in other countries have a little bit better dexterity. Like, I don't know, they just know how to work with their hands a little better.
A lot of them are being trained here in the US. They come here for their additional training. A lot of them.
Additional training. Right?
Additional training. Studies or
correct.
Diplomas.
Correct. Correct. You know? Correct. And that's because they want to have that on their wall. And believe it or not, we've bumped into a few doctors who had their location in San Diego, mm-hmm. have a small operative office in TJ, would uh-huh. go on the weekends, you know, buy their alcohol, have some fun, do their work, and come back to the United States and do their Monday through Friday. And then on the weekends, do some cases. Right. And so they dealt with it that way. And I got to tell you, I mean, you know, I'm going to bring the wall up that we were going to build.
That we were promised.
That we were promised that never happened. But when you go to TJ, there is a wall. It's a steel fence. Yeah. And it goes all the way from San Diego to across Texas, for goodness sake.
I see it.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's funny because when you're right on the border in TJ on the water, the fence goes into the Pacific a little bit. So theoretically, if you swam, you're in the same water. Mm-hmm. You have one side, you can live on the beach for $100,000. And then 3 miles away in San Diego, it would cost you $3 million to have something on the beach. So, you know, that's the way it goes, but I've experienced it and I see it, and, you know, the dental industry is changing a lot more than we're expecting. There are things that companies are doing, that would never have to do that, but everyone always talks about how the lab business is so not a great business, but everybody wants to get into it. All the big companies want to get into it and start doing work for dentists. You know,
was there a big, going back to the US, was there a big change for you guys or for you when you moved from the north to the south? Is there a difference between 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 Florida and the North?
Oh, yeah.
New York?
Absolutely.
Massachusetts?
I mean, New York and Massachusetts, especially Massachusetts, very conservative. Like when I was doing zirconia in 1999 and 2000, practically nobody was doing zirconia in Boston. Mm-hmm. But California, it was like wildfire. Everybody mm-hmm. jumped on it. And so by the time it started getting notoriety, it came into Boston. Here in Florida, it is mind-boggling of the amount of work that's in Florida. I never saw Florida as a prior to moving here. I just saw it as a vacation land. It was like, you know, you go to Disney and that's all there is to Florida. And mm-hmm. it's very different dentally. There's a lot of things going on in the dental world, and the doctors are really pleasant here. I don't know if it's the Southern hospitality part. They're mm-hmm. they're easy to talk to. The weather, they're just generally a little nicer people that I've met anyway. Mm-hmm. Nice group of people.
That's cool. Hey, I wanted to hear that. Go ahead, Nancy.
I wanted to mention, because we were talking about patients and how patients don't, sometimes patients don't even know to ask. They don't know that the lab exists. They think the doctor makes everything and they don't even think to ask. And I wanted to just mention this for our three listeners out there, that the NADL has their campaign, the What's in Your Mouth campaign, that is geared towards that, towards
how many years they've had trying to educate them.
But you know what? It's up to us also to promote it and let people know. You know, when you speak to people, like how many, when you go out, meet people for the, not people that you know, people that you meet, especially when I was in the lab, I would have this mm-hmm. where it would come up, you know, what do you do? Well, you know, I make porcelain crowns. And they're like, what? Like you make teeth? It's like, yeah. So once you, they don't know that that even happens, right?
Yeah.
And it is up to us to make sure that mm-hmm. people know that is what we do, because that way they learn also, right? And there's so much to it. And I mean, the fact that we're putting a prosthesis in their mouth and that patients don't even think to ask, where is that coming from? I think nowadays they are much more educated than they were, you know, 20 years ago, because information, there's so many ways to get the information nowadays. That I think it's you know, even if they don't look for it, they'll see it. But
so I got a question for you. Do you know that there's a law that laboratories can't advertise, like do commercials and advertise?
I heard this only because I know of a lab that he wanted to put up a billboard in the airport, and yep. he got hell for it, and he was yep. told no, you can't do it. And I don't know if it was the ADA. Or someone that was yeah. behind it that was blocking him. And I'm yeah. like, how is that possible? And he's
it
like,
is
yeah.
possible. It is possible crazy. For two reasons. One reason is we are unskilled labor in this industry.
That's
the other reason yep. we can't advertise, because it's like we are drug dealers. You're not mm-hmm. allowed to advertise. So when you think of a free country and a free economy with a business that you are told you are not allowed to advertise,
yeah,
it's actually scary. And I really believe, and I'll be the first one to say this because I'm working on a project that's going to motivate this. I believe that it's time for technicians, and I don't want to get this messed up. I think there's a time for us to unionize to a particular level. And I know it sounds crazy, but what I'm talking about is having a group that actually helps us, because we can't help ourselves. Like we have maybe me, maybe you, and then Mo and Ramon are on the other side, and we don't need that. This has nothing to do about, hey, we're being treated unfairly, like I'm working in a sweatshop. It's not about that. This is about creating an organization at a different level that actually can do something, because we are skilled labor. And I've taught this many times. We need to know math. We need to know physics. We need to know kinetics. We need to know material science. We need to understand manufacturing. We need to understand milling. We need to understand printing. We have to understand like things like the law of beams. We need to understand aesthetics and morphology, head and neck anatomy, and we're unskilled labor.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It's actually a shame that even the dental industry doesn't say, hey, this is a skilled labor. Now, what's that going to do for me? Is it going to make me get paid $2 more an hour? It has nothing to do with that.
Yeah,
it has to do with a level of respect.
I can open up a lemonade stand and advertise, but
you can't advertise.
It's just crazy.
And by the way, if you open up a lemonade stand, it's not unskilled labor.
Yeah.
And I don't know this, I have to make sure that I say this because I don't know if that's the law here in Florida. Maybe you do. I know this specific one that I'm talking about was not here. It was up north and he could not advertise. Isn't but I also want to say that I know the FDLA at one point, they were advocating for the, it's our group, I guess, for laboratory technicians within the state of Florida to be recognized at a professional level. It had something to do with that. I know the FDLA, they do great things and they're always advocating for you know, improving our situation within the dental industry. I would like to think that all states do have an organization like that, but I know the FDLA, at least here in Florida, they are very, they're very active and always, you know, looking for people to bring up ideas like the one that you said, right?
Yeah.
Where we do, you know, join forces to improve the industry and to improve our status within the industry, because that can only, I know you said, you know, it's not about working in sweatshops, et cetera, but it is about that also, right? It is about
To a certain degree, it's how are you going to have a school for, you know, like everyone's taught, look, I'm the digital guy, right? I understand digital at a different level than a lot of people out there. I'm sorry, I'm patting myself on the back, whatever. But at the end of the day, who's going to take over next? Is it going to be AI that you're going to press a button and your crown, your denture, your partial is going to be made? Maybe. But up until that point, you still need people to have an understanding. Because let's be serious now. In the dental schools today, I'm not going to name which ones they are because I want people to hear this loud and clear. You can graduate as a dentist with never making a denture. Now, if we as dental technicians at least understand to a small level that dentures are prosthetics, like there's a lot of technology going into a denture and restoring someone's bite and talking about the jaw and the movement, you know, and I don't want this to come out as, you know, I'm being negative towards dentists, but dentistry is not the simple part of just grinding a tooth and putting a crown on it. This is the medical section of a human being for their mouth. And we are now learning, even though we've known this, that if you have a bad tooth and an infection, you know, you have most of the blood in your head and you can get a really bad infection really fast, maybe have a heart attack. So we understand that the mouth needs to be a very healthy place. And it's a little more than just doing a crown. And I want to give kudos to the doctors that actually do a lot of care for their patients. And the way there are some labs that just bang out crowns, there are dentists that just bang out crowns too. And I think that they have a deeper responsibility to their patients. And it's not about money only. Yes, we're here to make money, but we can also do the right thing for the patient if we see something that's going wrong.
We need like a three-part series with you, man, because I just looked up and we zoomed past an hour. It's amazing.
I feel comfortable saying this because I'm talking to my friends. And even though I see the three of you, I know the other two people that are listening, they're also our friends. And
it's three.
Oh, they're 18. Oh, good. Basically, what I'd like to say and be sure of is that my personal goal is to try to teach and help dentistry. not dental technology. I want to help dental technology, but my goal is to change dentistry. And mm-hmm. and the way we can change dentistry is by helping and training doctors. Like, we see doctors every day that have workflow issues. Like, how do I do a crown under a partial digitally? There's nothing wrong with not knowing that. Like, I'm fortunate. I've been working with exocad for 10 years, 11, 12 now. There, and I've been doing digital. Remember, I did my first printing in 2000, 1999, back in the day. And if I tell you some names, you'll flip out. You know, I've done that. So I didn't know it either. Like, when I was doing it, I didn't know. I was learning it too. Mm-hmm. But I'm at a level where I know it. And now I can help doctors and or other technicians learn it. And really, that's my two-ended position. It's yeah. I love to see people like Joshua, who was a little bit under my wing. I call him my little Padawan. but now he's a Jedi master. And yeah. I get encouraged by that, because people are starting to understand these things, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. so the more they understand, the better we can increase our field. But there are some things that have to have, sorry to say, a hard change. And I don't know how it's going to happen. I'm working towards something in the idea of starting a union, but it is not in the aspect of changing how we work or what we do. It's more of the profession and containing it the right way. That's all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. We're gonna yeah. have a dental mafia like the unions, man. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, we got you as the hitman, so that's not so bad.
I want to be on the security team.
Yeah.
It's gonna be kind of like, we're gonna go back to Boston. We're gonna have the fish shops around the. Yeah.
We'll have a tea party. Office. We'll have a tea party, and we'll throw some people overboard. There we go. You know,
Mo, it's not me saying it. Okay, just for the record.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to be the bad guy today, but yeah. but I do love this industry, and I know you guys know me on a personal level, each of you, and mm-hmm. you know that my heart's in it on a different level, and anything I can do to help the industry. But I want to be real about it. Like,
yeah,
I want to be real that if a company says, hey, we can do this and we can't, we should, as an organization, be like, hey, man, like, we're not going to buy your product because of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Like, just simple like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's fair for these little mom and pop shop. Look, I'm very fortunate. I have friends like you. If I have a problem with my machines, I can call you directly. Not that I really have problems, but when I do, I can call you directly and you guys can handle it a different way for me. But I'm talking about the guys that really don't have the exposure, people who don't get a chance to go to Chicago because they're so busy doing what they're doing. And yeah. all they're doing is flipping the LMT magazine and going, well, I guess people are talking about this product. Let me try to learn about it. And it's not really a great learning experience. So that's kind of where my heart is for that stuff, because my dad was one of those guys, you know?
Yeah. Well, Nancy, you're going to have to bring him to the FDLA meeting then, make him part of it, make some changes over there.
He should. I mean, you know, they're always looking for people that have these ideas, because that's what they're there for. And they have done a lot for our, you know, for our field here in Florida. So they're definitely very active. So maybe you should be a part of that.
I'd love Johnny. To be a part of it. Yeah, I'd love yeah. to be a part of it.
I think Mo is right. We should do this. We should do a second part.
Sure.
If you guys are okay with that. Because I think we haven't covered, we've only covered maybe 50%. And I still got to hear Mo's story, how he met Johnny.
Yeah.
Because we still don't know that. And Nancy too.
No, this was awesome, man. And yeah, we've only covered a fraction, so we definitely do need to do a part two.
I'd love to give you sort of a little idea that it yeah. might be great to not only do these parts, but have these conversations and possibly have like an interactive thing with, yeah, with people in the industry. Because look, this is the way I'm thinking from the years of experience that I have with what I've seen. And I, like I said, I'm one of those fortunate guys. I had the luxury of going to Chicago when I was a kid and seeing other companies and traveling, yeah, the world and seeing how other businesses are run. And that's just my perspective. But I do know, the one thing that I definitely know is there's a lot of hardworking people, and I'm not discounting dentists. That's not what I'm mm-hmm. saying here, but there are a lot of hardworking small labs that are actually the majority of the laboratories out there mm-hmm. that don't have an opportunity to talk to someone that, that might give them a really straight story. Like, I don't need to sell you a machine. I can tell you what's good and bad of what I own. I can tell you what I've experienced, and you take that with a grain of salt and be like, okay, I heard his story. Let me hear yours. And yeah, maybe I can make a decision that way, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, and try to help the industry in that perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that is what we're trying to do. But Johnny, we have three listeners. Come on, man.
I mean, we should do those three listeners live if there's only three.
Well, and there is a train of thought, at least from my side, that at some point it will begin to be video. But first, mm-hmm. we got to establish this, right?
Sure.
And then at some point, we will also invite listeners, once we get over that five hurdle, to let them or ask them to be part of the podcast. Otherwise, we're in a bubble, right? And,
yep,
and we're not getting out there. And yep, we're also speaking with other people about being in the podcast and have a conversation like what we had today. You know, we had a conversation. I got shocked from some things that you said, but that's okay. So, but that's what this is about, having an open conversation about the industry, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do it. So why don't we do this then? Why don't we stop here? We do the second part later on. We have you back. And then we finish, we do some damage control on the second part.
Yeah, sure. Well, let me give you a little, let me give you a little background on why maybe I like to shake things up. And this will shock you actually even more. Uh-huh. So in World War II, mm-hmm. It took Nazi Germany 6 weeks to overtake France. 6 weeks.
It's the French. Let's just leave it there.
They were... It's quite a big country. It took 246 days to overtake Greece. Mm-hmm. So we're fighters, and there's a lot of countries that fought, but you know, Greece is a small little country. And so, you know, we generally like to shake things up a little bit, and we like to use logic and make sure that what we're doing is effective in whatever we like. And I want to be effective in dentistry. So
I'm not going to take it back. We got listeners in France.
So yeah.
Half joking.
Well, look, they can call me and complain to me, whatever. I don't care. I mean, it is what it is.
I'm about to go to France here in a little bit. I got to be good, man.
Yeah, there you go.
One of those three listeners might be living there.
You know, it's funny. My son was speaking with a dentist in Arizona, and they started talking about, and somehow they started talking about a podcast. And the doctor says, yeah, I listen to the On the Cusp. And my son's like, what? My dad, and blah, blah, blah. And it went on like that. So we have a confirmed listener.
Excellent.
We have one confirmed. He probably gave us that five star.
Rich, shout out to Rich.
He's a listener.
I still can't pronounce his last name, so that's just my boy Rich. Shout out to Rich. He messaged me, said he listened to it.
Nice.
W. I'm just gonna call him Rich Dub.
Yeah.
R Dub, because I cannot pronounce his name to save my
Wodzinski.
Life.
Wodzinski.
Yeah, that. My boy Rich. Go. But he I had to give him a shout out because he let Savag listens.
Hey, yeah, he's my boy too, man. He's my boy too.
Yeah, man.
I like Rich. He's a great guy.
We got the three listeners.
The last time I talked to him, he goes, how come you guys aren't doing the show anymore? I was like, we're getting all mad, politics, you know. Ramon was getting flustered. So
Ellen's feeling
flustered.
Yeah.
That's why we had to bring Nancy back. It's like, Nancy, you got to keep everybody in control. You got to cool everybody down. And she's the referee.
Yeah. No, but I love the format. I mean, so Johnny, we mix up the format. Sometimes it's just, we just start talking about crazy stuff. And other times, we know we have legitimate dental experts. So it's good to have you. So.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And I appreciate the ability to, you know, speak my mind, because I think the industry needs, I know a lot of people think this way, but I also know it's difficult. It's a difficult job, and, and we just need a little support. I'm, again, very fortunate. I have lots of friends and I can bounce things off of them. But there's a lot of labs out there that are working really hard and don't have that opportunity. And I hope we can build a community that's different than it was back in the day. That's all.
Let's do that.
The thoughts and comments of Johnny O are not reflected of On the Cusp. They are his own personal opinion, so don't get mad at him.
Yeah. Don't get mad at Ramon or Mo or Nancy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, guys, let's cut it off here. Right. And then we'll come back and continue talking to you, Johnny. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thanks
Johnny.
For everything. I actually want to do one little shout out too. So Shannon's my boy. He's the Benko rep. He's just a good man. And if you ever need any help, he can guide you the right way. He's a straight shooter. So I like him a lot.
He definitely is. I tell you what, that is one rep that will stand up for his customers for sure.
Absolutely.
100%. No matter what.
Absolutely. No matter what. So thank you guys very much. I hope you have a great evening. And I'm looking forward to the next one. And hopefully maybe I can be on the, I'm on that side of the panel and I can grill some people.
No, there you go. We'll have to go to Pasco County and do one.
I don't know about that. That's gonna be cut out. A lot of stuff's gonna get cut out of that one.
Yeah.
Everybody turn on the ankle bracelets. Let's go to
Pasco. Yeah, right.
Nancy, well, thank you. Johnny, thank you. Mo, thanks a lot.
Right, thank guys, you, guys. Man, thank you. Yep. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Adios.
Bye.